Welcome to the Marketplace Roundtable Podcast. We speak with Seeking Alpha Marketplace authors about their investing styles, their views on the market, and their favorite investing ideas. I'm your host, Jonathan Liss. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. Seeking Alpha is a website where authors from around the world share their ideas and analysis on the stock market. The Marketplace is our platform for authors to run investing analysis and idea services so that readers can take their investing to the next level. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. The opinions expressed on this podcast represent those of the people expressing them alone. A full set of disclosures will be provided at the end of this podcast. Brief bit of housekeeping here. As discerning listeners will notice, we were having some audio problems. So unlike the usual back and forth in real time, there was a bit of that, but part of this was recorded as a back and forth where we sent a question and answer back and forth between myself and Alex. I still think the end product is really, really good and should be really informative, particularly if you're interested in investing in space. And the two ETFs, ARKX and UFO, currently available for investors there. For reference purposes, this podcast is being recorded on Tuesday, April 27th, 2021. I'm joined today by Alex King, aka Sestrian Capital Research, who runs the Fundamentals Marketplace Service here at Seeking Alpha. A contributor to Seeking Alpha since 2017, Alex has picked up more than 10,000 followers through his in-depth coverage of the cloud computing and space sectors. Alex has degrees from the University of Cambridge and the London School of Economics. Before establishing Sestrian Capital Research in 2017, he worked as a technology venture capitalist, specifically in leveraged buyouts. He received his executive education at the International Space University in 2018. Subscribers to Alex's service, The Fundamentals, receive all of his proprietary research on cloud and space sector stocks, a regularly updated model portfolio, and perhaps most importantly, membership in a community of investors with similar interests. And of course, subscribers get direct access to Alex. Okay, let's get into it. Alex, welcome to the podcast. So happy you could join me here today.
Thanks, Jonathan. I appreciate the invite.
Love to just discuss your marketplace service, The Fundamentals, for a bit here. Specifically, how you would describe yourself or characterize yourself as an investor and what your general approach to investing is. So following you on Seeking Alpha for a while now, it's pretty clear that you're not a strict fundamentals-only investor. How would you characterize your approach to investing?
So to characterize myself as an investor, I would make a number of points. First of all, I like to invest in growing companies. Growth, as we all know, can solve for many mistakes along the way. If you happen to buy in at not quite the right price or not quite the right time, or you're underweight or you're overweight, growth will solve a lot of problems for you if you're just patient. And so across both the technology companies that invest in personally and that our firm covers, and the space sector companies, again, which I invest in personally and the firm covers, I generally prefer to back the growth names. I like to look really deep in the company financials to look at not just the recognized revenue and profit and cash flow, but also look below the waterline to see which direction recognized growth is likely to go. And you can't always tell this perfectly, as you know, but in the large defense companies, if you inspect the direction of the backlog that they report, so backlog is growing faster than recognized revenue, there's a good chance that recognized revenue can grow faster in the future than it does today. And in the software companies that we back, if you look at a measure called remaining performance obligation, which you won't find in the earnings release, but you will find in the 10Q if you look to about page 706, remaining performance obligation is basically the total contracted book of business, the forward revenue book that the company is signed up to. It's described as an obligation because it's a liability to owe to its customers. And again, if RPO is growing faster than total recognized revenue, there's a good chance that revenue is going to speed up. If, on the other hand, it's growing slower, there's a good chance that revenue is going to slow down over time. And so I like to look really deep into the numbers to figure out, is this company going to accelerate or slow down? Also like to look at the fundamental accounting margins, but in particular the cash flow margins. So is the business really generating actual money after capex, after changing working capital, actual folding stuff with which you can pay lenders and pay the IRS and pay dividends and so on, actual money. So my favorite kind of business is one in a growth sector, which itself is growing, where it looks like it's going to grow faster in the future than it does today, and where it's already generating positive cash flow margins, or looks like it might do at some point in the future. I don't particularly care for dividend investing personally. I understand lots of people do, but it's not something that particularly gets me excited. I would rather invest in companies with capital gain potential. And I think another point to make would be, as you say, our work as a firm, we're not pure fundamentals investors, and that's right. You'll see an element of technical analysis in our work. I wouldn't overstate the degree to which that's true. There's far better technical analysts in this world than us. But we do like to respect the stock direction. We like to respect the market. We like to respect the stock chart, if only because we've learned over time that, you know, if a chart looks a certain way to us, it probably looks a certain way to the rest of the market, and the rest of the market's likely to behave accordingly. And with public stocks, different with private, but in public stocks, where you want to be is just slightly ahead of what everybody else is going to do, not too far ahead, and certainly not very different to what everybody else is going to do. You want to anticipate where the crowd is heading, and stock charts can help you do that. So personally, and also within our firm's coverage, I use a combination of sector analysis. So is this a sector that should host plenty of growth companies? Fundamental analysis on a particular business. Is revenue growing, and is it likely to grow faster or slower in the future? Is it producing plenty of cash, or is it likely to in the future? And also, where is the stock at the point in its chart? And so does that represent a buying opportunity, a do-nothing opportunity, or a selling opportunity? So that, I would say, would sum up my approach, and also sums up the approach of our firm. And if you look at the stocks that as a firm we pick and highlight, they all reflect that sort of preference.
More recently, you've been drawn to the space sector. Why space specifically? What interest does it hold there for you, and both, I guess, personally, and I guess more importantly for listeners of this show, the investing side of the equation?
Why space? Well, I spent my career as an institutional investor in the technology sector, first of all in venture capital and then private equity, and got myself interested in the space sector as really an extension of technology. I saw it as the next great leap forward, if you like, in the tech industry. You know, space now looks to us, at any rate, a little like tech did in maybe the 70s, 80s, something like that, where it was just getting started as a diversified industry with plenty of different suppliers and large number of customers and emerging competition and all of the things that are needed for a fertile, large market of many, many stocks into which one can invest. The trigger for all of this was the ending of the NASA owned and operated space shuttle program. So as many of your listeners will know, that was brought to a close in 2011, really on budgetary concerns. And in its place, first of all, the launching of American astronauts into space from American soil finished. That was contracted out to Russian government providers, ironically enough, given the outcome of the first space race. And in addition, things like the commercial resupply contracts for the space station were handed out to Orbital ATK, subsequently acquired by Northrop Grumman, a great piece of M&A that, to SpaceX, famously. And further beyond that, the crewed mission contracts were handed out to SpaceX and to Boeing. And they've proven a big success. So the arrangement here is that NASA is the customer. Now, NASA's always been the customer. Previously, they would pay build contractors like Boeing or Lockheed Martin predecessors to build capsules or boosters or whatever it might be, and NASA would then operate them. And again, as many of your listeners will know, In the case of these new NASA contracts, the private companies both own and operate the spacecraft. And it's been a big success. It's been very effective on the cargo resupply missions. And SpaceX has now flown two crews to the space station and returned one safely. And the second crew that was flown up there just a week or two ago was on a reused booster. So space is in a really, really interesting place. It's now operated on a commercial basis. And there are customers other than just, you know, the US government or various agencies of the EU or European governments or the Russian government. Government's still the biggest category of buyer. That'll probably be the case for some time, maybe ever, maybe always. But in addition, with the onset of small launch vehicles, small satellites, and so on, there are many, many, many companies that use space in order to collect data, generate data, transmit data, use space for communications, you know, Iridium being the obvious example. There are others on the way. And this is a whole new sphere, a whole new market sector that's opening up. You, in addition, have things like the space tourism category, which looks like it will become a real thing soon, not only with Virgin Galactic, but also with both Blue Origin and SpaceX becoming, you know, likely real providers of that experience very soon. And then you have, you know, low-end, low-cost vendors like Spire Global. This is a current SPAC deal. Ticker is NSH. It's yet to de-SPAC, but is expected to do so this quarter, which builds, launches, and operates very small satellites that do things like weather forecasting, aircraft monitoring, you know, very, very useful data that can only be obtained from space, and they do it at very, very low cost. And so, like in tech, where Moore's law was the driving force for cost curve reduction, in space you have huge reductions in launch cost, you know, per kilo to orbit, huge reductions in hardware cost, and reductions in data transmission costs. And with the reduction in cost comes the ability to serve many, many different kinds of customer with many kinds of service. And it's that expansion of, this, if you like, supply side expansion of the market, which has led to an expansion of demand. And that has created a whole new class of vendors that are now starting to come to market and are available to invest. So I see it as a really exciting new market opportunity that I think has decades of growth ahead of it. And, you know, if you are a growth investor, if you're a tech investor, as I myself am, it's pretty hard not to get excited about that.
Space has certainly become a very hot topic for investors recently. The rollout of the Cathie Wood managed ARK Space Exploration and Innovation ETF, ticker symbol ARKX, really less than a month ago as of this recording date, actually, was one of the most hyped ETF launches in recent memory. Let's talk about the opportunity here, broadly speaking. Why is space a theme that investors need to be paying attention to at this specific moment?
Well, as we just talked about, it's a new growth industry. Again, which I personally think has, you know, some decades of growth ahead of it. And I think that as an investor in be it individual public stocks or ETFs, I think the appeal here is pretty straightforward. I think, number one, we're going to see a rush of new vendors into the space sector, you know, new suppliers, many of whom are now starting to come to market as individual public companies. That wasn't the case even a couple of years ago. You know, we set up Cestrian in 2017 in anticipation of this with, at the time, a pure space focus. And there was a handful of pure plays that you could invest in at the time, names like Iridium, Maxar. They were called something different at the time, Maxar Technologies, Aerojet Rocketdyne, since acquired by Lockheed, but just a handful. You know, and now there's probably 10 or 12 pure play stocks, many of whom are SPAC deals. So there's a big expansion of suppliers, and many of those are or are going to be individual public stocks. So the diversity of stocks that are available to invest in has increased, and I think is going to continue to increase materially. You then have this expansion in the ETF market. So as we will talk about later, you know, ARKX isn't the first space sector ETF. That honor goes to the wonderfully tickered UFO. But the fact that it's entered the market, and no doubt will herald the entry of others into the market, I think will attract capital into the market, because, you know, many investors understandably feel safer investing in ETFs than they do individual traded stocks. So I think we have the confluence here of, one, a supply side driven increase in demand for space services, as we've talked about. So as the cost curve has come down on the supply side, that makes demand more fillable, if you like, at low cost. That itself will drive expansion of demand. That leads to an increase of numbers of vendors entering the market, many of whom, as I said, already have or soon will launch as public stocks. And then the capital to invest in those stocks and trade those stocks, I think, will be fueled both by, if you like, enthusiast investors, for want of a better word, buying the individual names themselves, and also, yeah, the market at large buying ETF names. ETFs, in my view, are a wonderful creation. In tech and in space, they are instruments that I use rarely personally, but sometimes. But in sectors where I'd like some exposure and I don't have any particular knowledge, you know, I use them all the time. So I think that a well-managed ETF is a wonderful thing, and I expect to see many more of them in space.
Let's get into ARKX specifically. Are you a fan of Cathie Wood's growth at any price management style? And how does that affect your approach towards this ETF, and what kind of returns you think are reasonable for investors to expect from it?
I'm not sure that she has a growth at any price style, if I'm honest. I mean, famously, she publishes some of the trades that the funds do every night. I think there's a myth that all of the trades are published. They're not. If you read the small print, it's just a handful of them. But nonetheless, you get a flavour of their trading activity. And they're pretty active in trimming positions or adding to positions. And they're, I would say, fairly price sensitive in both directions. So sometimes you'll see them buy dips. Sometimes you'll see them sell weakness. So I'm not sure I'd categorize them as grow at any price. Am I a fan of Cathie Wood? Absolutely. I think that the performance that ARK's put in across, you know, all of its funds in the last 5 years has been nothing short of incredible. And whilst it's true to say that, you know, you can say, well, the market's helped them, that's a bit unfair to ARK, in my view, which is they've picked a strategy that has suited the market and it's worked incredibly well. Now, that ARK and Cathie Woods personally has a whole bunch of detractors is not really surprising. You know, there's nothing that causes upset rather than great success. And there's a lot of ARK detractors right now. And, yeah, the start of 2021 has been a bit choppy, a bit bumpy for growth investors. And so that's provided plenty of grist to the mill of anybody who wants to knock ARK. But I think the style is superb. I mean, first of all, the results have been terrific across, you know, all of the funds. And the work they publish, you know, there's a lot of marketing in that work. You wouldn't call it pure investment research. There's lots of, you know, fund marketing embedded in the work. But that's just a smart business practice. It works for them. And so, yeah, I am a fan. And for as long as ARK is successful, then they have a real ability to be able to bless individual stocks somewhat. You know, so particularly the lower volume stocks, if it's seen that ARK is buying or selling those stocks, then it does have an impact on the day-to-day price and to an extent the longer-term trend as well. What return would I expect from the ETF? Who knows? I mean, I don't know how anyone can model that. I mean, I hold some ARKX personally. It's not one of my bigger holdings. I bought it out of an interest really rather than anything else. I mean, space is obviously a sector that we as a firm and I personally know pretty well, and so I would hope to be able to pick stocks, you know, personally reasonably well in that space. But But out of interest and curiosity, I bought into ArcX pretty much as soon as it started trading. And what return would I expect? I'd expect it to go up, and I would hope it would go up pretty meaningfully over the course of the next few years. And if well managed, I would expect it to outperform the Nasdaq, because space companies, if you pick the right ones, are growing faster than, you know, your regular tech company. Certainly the older tech companies that form the bulk of the Nasdaq. And I would expect, as space becomes a more mainstream sector in which to invest, I'd expect to see more capital come into the sector. And I would expect the combination of underlying company growth and capital coming in to drive stock prices faster than the Nasdaq at large. And so, yeah, I had pretty high hopes for ArcX. And, I hope to do well with it personally. I would be very surprised if ARC didn't.
I am speaking with Alex King, a.k.a. Sestrian Capital Research, who runs the Fundamentals Marketplace service here at Seeking Alpha. You can subscribe to the Fundamentals by going to seekingalpha.com and typing the Fundamentals or Sestrian Capital Research into the search bar at the top of the site, or by going to seekingalpha.com/marketplace and looking for the Fundamentals there. Digging into the holdings a bit here, in typical ARK fashion, the top holdings are very concentrated, with more than 50% of the fund weighted to just about 10 names. And this discounts the 3D printing ETF, ticker symbol PRNT, which as the second largest holding adds a level of diversification to the fund. What do you make of the concentration within the fund? And is this something that you view as a positive when trying to reap the benefits of a very niche thematic sector like space? Or is this something that you would maybe dial down a bit if you were picking the constituents here?
I don't think concentration per se is a problem here. You know, I think if you're buying a sector-specific ETF, then you've already committed in your mind that you're going to concentrate that holding in a very particular area of the economy. And you are presumably doing that because you hope for outperformance. I don't particularly think there is safety in diversification. Diversification, I think, is a great idea if you want to try and achieve, you know, the index returns. And nothing wrong with that. So if what you want is an ETF to mirror the Standard & Poor's or the NASDAQ or whatever index it might be, then you would want and expect plentiful diversification in there for all the reasons that we know. But if you're looking to outperform, then I suspect one has to concentrate somewhat on the top picks. And so concentration in and of itself, I personally don't have a problem with that. I think the initial picks in the ArcX fund are odd, and I rather assume that they are placeholders rather than a finished article. It's odd to have as a top 10 holding one of your own funds. You know, it's unusual. Cross fund holdings, in my experience, are rarely a great idea. It also indicates something of a lack of imagination, you know, one might say. So I sort of hold my judgment really on the first set of picks. There's some obvious names that are not in the fund right now. Maxar Technologies, you know, stands out like a sore thumb as not being in there. You know, presume there's a reason for that, but not sure what the reason is. I don't know why, as I say, you'd have one of your own ETFs as a major holding. So I personally suspend judgment for now and see how it plays out over the next few months. But concentration in and of itself, no, I think that's okay. I think you're buying a space sector ETF, you're choosing concentration, and that can be okay.
So speaking of weighting, we need to dig in at least a little bit to Trimble, ticker symbol TRMB, the top holding, which at more than 9% of the fund, clearly has a very outsized influence on ARKX's performance. What's your take on Trimble? Is this the right bet to be making at the very top of the fund?
I will be absolutely honest, we don't cover Trimble, and we don't cover it for the very selfish reason that it bores us. And that's probably unreasonable, and we probably should cover it. But, you know, we pretty much only cover stocks that, you know, excite us and companies that interest us, and we don't cover Trimble. one of the reasons to buy ETFs at all is to get some exposure to stocks that you don't know yourself, and to outsource your investment judgment a little bit to managers that you trust and who have put in a strong track record. And so I'm very happy, speaking for my own personal holding in ArcX, that Cathie Woods and team have assessed this, the name, and they like it. That's great. Personally, you know, the stock has performed very well. It's outperformed the NASDAQ over, you know, most periods that you can measure on a total return basis. But it's not really the kind of business that floats our boat. It doesn't grow consistently. It's pretty diverse in what they're trying to do across hardware, software, services, and so on. Multiple industry focus. And it's been a big success over the last 30, 40 years. But it's actually not one we cover because find it a bit boring, if I'm honest. So I think it's odd that it's the top holding both of ArcX and as we'll no doubt talk about later, the other space sector ETF UFO. And again, I don't know whether that's just a lack of imagination or what, really. I mean, there's plenty of other companies that you could characterize as space businesses that could easily form an anchor holding. Yeah, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, Northrop Grumman. You know, if you wanted a big, solid, stable business, then as the corner holding, certainly in the early months and years of the fund, you could pick any of those names: Maxar, Iridium, plenty of others that could be there. So, if the team likes Trimble, that's great. You know, my experience of investing in other ARK funds is that they do know what they're doing. The returns have been solid, and I've done well personally from that. So I trust their judgment, but it's actually not a stock we cover.
We could get into your own portfolio style for a bit. Do you believe in tighter position size limits than what you may see in an ARK style fund? Would you ever overweight a single name to the extent that ARKX does with Trimble?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, the way that, just speaking for myself here, I tend to manage personal capital is in different pools. So they tend to be organized by time period. So I'll have a pool of capital that has a, let's call it a 10-year horizon, a pool of capital that has a 2 or 3 year horizon, and a pool that has, you know, weeks or months horizon. And so, yeah, within those individual pools, sometimes I'll be, you know, have 10, 15% of that pool in one particular name. You know, would I have 10 or 15% across all those pools, so 10 or 15% of personal capital at work in one name? No, I think that's probably too much risk, and you're asking for trouble for you to do that. So, again, back to a point I made earlier, I'm not sure that the current holdings in ArcX are quite reflective of where it will be in a few months' time or years' time. And I obviously have no insight into that. This is wild speculation on my part. But again, the stock picks seem kind of odd as they are. So not sure one should draw too many conclusions right now from the concentration or the weighting or even the individual names that are in there.
There's one ETF in the market, which has been around significantly longer than ARKX, which is a direct comparison to it and really does give investors that want to play the space theme a real choice here. And that ETF is the Procure Space ETF, ticker symbol UFO, hell of a ticker symbol. While there's certainly some overlap in the top holdings, with Trimble being the most notable example, but certainly IRDM, Iridium also, these funds are clearly still taking quite different approaches to playing this theme. What would you say the key differences are between ARKX and UFO?
You're right. UFO launched, what, 2+ years ago now? Probably 3 years ago now. That also, I mentioned a few times now that I think the holdings in ArcX are a little odd. And I felt the same when UFO launched. Now, UFO tracks a particular index provided by S-Index, I think is the provider. But if you look at the holdings that have been in UFO over time, they've been what I would characterize as pretty old tech names. So there's been a heavy bias towards satellite communications of one kind or another. You know, companies like EchoStar, Iridium, and so on. And clearly they are space businesses. But they're not really at the cutting edge of where space is right now on two fronts. So neither are those names, you know, high growth young companies like your Spire Globals, which you would expect to be shooting for, you know, rapid stock price appreciation. And nor are they your, what I would expect to see as anchor tenants, which is your large diversified defence contractors, which have substantial space divisions, which are generating pretty heavy growth. You know, Northrop Grumman's or Lockheed Martin's, or you know, another great example there actually is L3 Harris, LHX, which is not a business people associate with the space sector. But if you look at their growth, a great deal of that is coming from space. You know, they've set out their stall as wanting to become, in their phrase is the sixth prime, meaning the sixth, you know, major prime defence contractor. And they seem to be trying to achieve that by winning more and more and more space contracts with the US government. So what gets myself and our firm excited about space is the, if you like, a barbell strategy between, on the one hand, the slightly more cumbersome but reliable dividend producing, you know, rock solid companies you can invest in the defense sector with, you know, big space exposure, big growth from space. And on the other, your smaller, higher growth, riskier for sure, but probably higher growth stock price growth potential names, you know, your Maxars, your Rocket Labs, names like that. And UFO just has never taken that strategy. And I discussed it once with the manager there, and you know, their answer was, well, you know, retract the index, and that's what's in the index. And okay, you know, that's their choice. And you know, certainly of late, the stock price in UFO has done well. I mean, I think it languished for a while, but the attention that fell into the sector once ArcX was floated as a potential fund has really benefited UFO. So, you know, good for them. Key differences between the two funds. Well, UFO, you know, bear in mind all the comments I've just made about it. It is, you know, truly a space-focused fund. They're not necessarily the picks that you know, we as a firm personally would make if we were the manager, but it is a space-focused fund. You know, ArcX, as is, you know, much commented on all across Seeking Alpha and elsewhere, you know, Netflix is in it, for instance, because it uses satellite communication at some level. You know, John Deere is in it because you can receive data on a tractor from space. And if you look in the fund documentation for ArcX, I mean, it was pretty clear pre-launch that they had a broad brush category of, you know, companies that can benefit from space that the fund is permitted to hold. And, you know, that basically means most companies you can think of, I expect, in some way. So I would say the main differences between those two funds are UFO is genuinely space-focused, pretty narrow in its picks, slightly, you know, unambitious, I would say, in its picks, but definitely very narrowly space-focused, whereas ArcX has just cast itself as wide as it possibly can in the fund docs and subsequently in the initial holdings. And, you know, we'll see which works out best. I mean, it's obviously, we all understand why ARC has given themselves as much scope as possible, which is that they want, you know, the widest possible remit to make the widest possible picks in pursuit of fund performance. Yeah, we all understand that. I'm surprised that there hasn't been more pushback on that. But I suppose everyone's just waiting to see, you know, how well the fund does. And of course, if the fund does really well and the, you know, the ETF stock price does really well, then people will forgive, you know, all manner of oddities and strange things and, you know, license taken in exchange for good fund performance. If the fund doesn't perform well, then I suppose people will start to pick on that as the reason why. Which fund do I think investors are better off with? That's a tough one. Well, all I can say is I can only tell you what I've done with my own personal money, and that is I bought into ArcX on the first day of trading with a fairly modest holding, and I've kept it there, and I expect to hold that position for, you know, some time, number of years probably. I don't own any UFO, and I never have done, because I thought the stock picks were, you know, somewhat dull and bit lacking in imagination. That said, you know, UFO has done really well recently. If you look at the price of the ETF stock, it's done very well recently, and they have had a couple of their holdings do well. So Orbcomm, which is one of their top 10 holdings, was recently acquired by a private equity firm, so they'll have had enjoyed some good gains in that. You know, Iridium, as which is another UFO holding, has run up nicely, in part off the back of the ARKX splash, but in part off of their own performance. So, you know, UFO has done well. But if you ask me personally what I've done with my own money, it's ARKX. But that, if I'm, you know, honest, is simply because I've seen ARK do so well with their other funds, and I've been in and out of their funds personally, and I've always done well with them, that I just expect the manager to continue to do well with this fund. And that comes down to that's my assessment of the pick, which is I think the manager will perform well. It doesn't really reflect what I think of the underlying holdings right now, because, you know, I can invest in Netflix myself. I don't need a fund manager to do that for me. But I think that I think ARK will perform well with ARKX as they have with their other funds. And so that's the pick I made personally.
Thanks, Alex. This has been really, really great. Everyone should definitely go and follow Cessrian Capital Research at Seeking Alpha. You'll get access to all of Alex's free articles there. I want to thank you for being so generous with your time today, Alex. Keep up the great work and best of luck. I hope we can get you on the show again soon.
Not at all. Thanks very much for inviting me on. It's a pleasure to talk to you. You know, always very happy to talk about space or tech or any of the other things that we cover. And yeah, I hope people will look up our work on Seeking Alpha and follow us and read all of our work on the site, both our free articles and, of course, our marketplace service. So thanks again.
We just spoke with Alex King, a.k.a. Cessrian Capital Research, who runs the Fundamentals marketplace service here at Seeking Alpha. You can subscribe to the Fundamentals by going to seekingalpha.com and typing the Fundamentals or Cessrian Capital Research, that's CESTRIAN Capital Research, into the search bar at the top of the site, or by going to seekingalpha.com/marketplace and looking for the Fundamentals there. You can also follow Cessrian Capital Research on seekingalpha.com and enjoy Alex's free content there. For disclosures, Alex King is long, ARKX, NSH, NSH.W, and MAXR. I, Jonathan List, don't have positions in any of the stocks or funds discussed in today's show. If you've been enjoying the Seeking Alpha Marketplace Roundtable podcast, you can subscribe through iTunes, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also give reviews on those platforms to help other investors discover this podcast. We just spoke with Alex King, a.k.a. Cessrian Capital Research, who runs the Fundamentals marketplace service here at Seeking Alpha. You can subscribe to the Fundamentals by going to seekingalpha.com and typing the Fundamentals or Cessrian Capital Research, that's CESTRIAN Capital Research, into the search bar at the top of the site, or by going to seekingalpha.com/marketplace and looking for the Fundamentals there. You can also follow Cessrian Capital Research on seekingalpha.com and enjoy Alex's free content there.
If you've been enjoying the Seeking Alpha Marketplace Roundtable podcast, you can subscribe through iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Stitcher. You can also give reviews on those platforms to help other investors discover this podcast.